somebody that has not been in our church in about 3 years now. We were talking before service and decided it was prior to Reverend Patrick's being here that he was here. The Reverend Arnold Pope is with us to deliver the message. It's good to have him back in the pulpit. And I heard somebody say to him on the way in this morning, I wish you'd brought the bagpipes. The next time he comes, he has to bring the bagpipes. We need to hear that. We haven't had that in a long time. Without anything else to do, I'm going to turn the service over to Reverend Pope.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you, choir, for what you just did. It is a real pleasure to me to be over here with you again. Like she said, I preached here before, but it's been long enough now that you've forgotten it. So I can start off on a good foot, but I'm always glad to be here. I've got some good friends in this church. And in particular, I'm always happy to be able to share with a congregation, as I've done about 20 times now, the story of what God did in my life when I was hit and severely injured by the wild throw of a 22-pound hammer up at Grandfather Mountain Scottish Games in 98. But before saying anything else, let me read my lesson from God's Word for today, because I want that to sort of permeate everything else that's said or done here this morning. It's Psalm 121. If you can find that in your pew Bibles, or if you don't have a pew Bible available, it's page 844 in the Methodist hymnal. And I would suggest that you might want to keep either that pew Bible or that hymnal open to that spot the remainder of the service, because periodically you might want to refer back to what that psalm has to say. Psalm 121. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence does my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is the shade on your right hand. The sun shall not smite you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. And from Paul's second letter to Timothy, chapter 1, verse 12, I know whom I have believed, and I'm convinced he's able to keep that which I've committed to him against that day. Amen, and may God bless this reading from his word. Now, I said I wanted to share with you the experience I had with the Lord when I was hit by a 22-pound hammer. The first thing you have to realize is that getting hit with a 22-pound hammer is what the psychologists call a defining moment in life. You know, it will get your attention. Now, some of you may not know what a Scottish Games is. Briefly, they are celebrations of Scottish heritage and culture that have taken place in Scotland for hundreds of years, and in recent times have become rather popular in this country. We're lucky in North Carolina. We've got three of them, every third weekend in April up at Lake Norman, every second weekend in July at Grandfather Mountain, and every first weekend in October, not far from here over at Red Springs. They're like a five-ring circus with something going on to suit everybody. There's competition in bagpiping, both solo and band. There's Scottish dance competition. There's Scottish sheepdog herding demonstration, Scottish fiddling, Scottish harp playing, and dearest to my heart, the rather unique Scottish athletic events. Tossing the caber and throwing the 56-pound weight, and some other rather strange things. Now, although my primary athletic career has been in weightlifting, I got intrigued by these events and started competing in them in 1966, and did so for 20 years, and then I got too old and decrepit to compete any longer and began to judge. And that's what I was doing that Saturday up at Grandfather Mountain when I was hit by that wild throw of the hammer. Now, some of you still may not know what a 22-pound hammer is. Basically, it's just a 22-pound steel ball. It has a hole drilled through the middle of it, and into that hole is jam-fitted a 4-foot wooden handle. The athlete grabs the far end of that handle puts his back to the direction in which he wishes to throw and begins to wind the hammer round and round his head and shoulders, getting faster and faster with each revolution until he's built up all the momentum he can handle, and then with a mighty heave slings it over his left shoulder and hope it sails 110, 20 feet down the field. Now, an awful lot of momentum is built up, and therein lies the possibility of danger. If that hammer's turned loose a little too early or a little too late, sometimes it tears out of the thrower's hands altogether. Once at a games down in Dunedin, Florida, I saw the hammer slip out of the thrower's hands, sail off at about 90 degrees to where it should have gone, scattered a bunch of people, and disappeared through the wall of one of the clan tents around the edge of the field. An instant later, a little old lady with blue hair zoomed out of the front of that tent like a scalded cat. Now, folks, she had to be at least 2 years older than baseball. I'm serious. But she came out of that tent faster than some of the Olympic sprinters did out of the starting blocks down at Sydney last September. A 22-pound steel ball burying itself in the ground 6 inches deep at your feet is a powerful energizer. You know, it'll jumpstart you. Which is why some of my friends from the games have said to me, "Pope, knowing what you do about how dangerous the hammer can be, why were you fool enough to get hit with one?" Well, it's real simple. I'm about half smart. And the whole time I was doing my job judging the amateur athletes, I'd position myself so I could judge them and at the same time look through them across the field to where the pros were throwing the hammer. I was not about to take my eyes off that thing. But the event was over. You could see the competitors picking up their gear and heading back to the athletic tent to take a break. So my assistant judge and I turned around and were proceeding to set up for our next event, not realizing that the winner of the hammer throw was going to take an extra attempt, see if he could set a new field record, pick up an extra $50. All we knew was someone suddenly screamed, "Look out!" And an instant later, there was this tremendous impact into my back, just below the right shoulder blade. Now, folks, I thought I'd been hit playing football, but I found out I didn't know what being hit was. Unbelievable force. I knew immediately my ribs were broken. I could feel them give with the impact. Smashed me down onto my knees and then over onto my face. And then I did something that wasn't real smart. Instead of waiting for medical personnel to come and expertly turn me over, I managed to roll myself over onto my back. And as I did, I was looking up toward where you can see the twin peaks of Grandfather Mountain above the trees around McRae Meadow where the games are held. I realized later so much of Psalm 121 applied to my situation. I will lift my eyes up into the hills. I was looking up at the hills, not through any choice of my own. From whence does my help come? I knew I needed some help badly. I'm not a doctor, but I knew I was severely hurt. Didn't know how severely. Your help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. I didn't think of all of that then. But one phrase from Psalm 121 flashed into my mind. Folks, that's why it's good to have the scriptures in your mind and not just your eyes. The Lord is your keeper. And with the first breath I was able to draw, I said, "Lord, I put all of this into your hands. I turn it all over to you." And friends, that swept over me the most indescribably beautiful sense of peace, of calm, of serenity. It was the peace of God. That peace which the Bible rightly describes as being far beyond all human understanding. And in that moment, I knew that the Lord was my keeper and that everything was going to be all right. Now, I don't mean to imply I got some kind of mystical revelation that I was going to be physically okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know whether I was going to live or die. But I knew that I was in God's care and that I was going to be all right. And what a difference that made. What was happening to me there on that field at McCrae Meadow is what John Wesley used to call experiential religion. By that he meant not just a religious faith that you had sort of absorbed by growing up in a godly family, as great as that is, nor even one that you had come to by reading a book or by talking with someone, but experiential religion, he said, was where your faith and life slammed head on into each other. And your faith was severely tested and tried in some experience of life and was proven to be true. So that from then on, you didn't just believe, you didn't just know, you knew in here that it was so. One of our tire companies used to have a slogan, where the rubber meets the road. Well, experiential religion is where faith meets the road of life and is tested and proven to you in your own life to be true. I'd always believed that the Lord was my keeper. Now I knew it. It's a big difference. And what a difference it made in a situation that could have easily been filled with fear and anxiety. I was just as calm as a clam. Now I don't take any credit for that. It wasn't my doing. That was the Lord's doing, not mine. But ordinarily, it would be kind of hard to keep you cool when you look up and you see 290-pound Scottish athletes with tears trickling down their cheeks. You see people shake their heads and turn away. That's kind of discouraging. And they're strapping you on a bodyboard and stuffing you in an ambulance. And the ambulance got real interesting because on the other side of it was a guy having a heart attack. But I was just as calm as I could be. The only thing that concerned me was that someone find my grandson. We hadn't needed his help in that last event and had turned him loose to roam around and enjoy the games. I wanted to be sure I would get to see him. Well, they cranked that ambulance up and carried me about 10 miles to a little place I'd never heard of before, Crossnoer, North Carolina. Sloot Memorial Hospital. A little 40-bed place, but to me it's the greatest hospital in the world. As the product of two Presbyterian doctors, a man and his wife, who came there in 1909 as part of a Presbyterian home mission project. And I got the most blessed care any man could have received there. But you know, I realized later that by the time I got to that little hospital, I might have gotten too relaxed, because it dawned on me I'd given the examining doctor a Louis Grizzard answer. What it was, they had me laid out on a slab in their little emergency room. This doctor came and looked down at me with a frown on his face. Now, folks, when a doctor looks at you with a frown on his face, you know you're in deep water then. He said, "Well, the best that we can tell from the x-rays, you've got at least 3 broken ribs. Your right lung is collapsed, and there's some bleeding going on inside your chest cavity." I said, "Well, doctor, what can you do about that?" He said, "Well, we're going to cut a hole in your chest. And we're going to run a tube through that hole all the way down to the bottom of your chest. And we're going to try to siphon that blood off." I said, "Do what?" Seemed a little strange to me, but he did it. And it must have worked, because I'm here. Well, I stayed in that little hospital for 8 days. Got the most blessed care that a man could have received. But I'll tell you, folks, I don't like hospitals. I don't like being in one. I couldn't get comfortable in that bed. Couldn't have sleep. And it was a kind of a trying experience, because my wife was having some back trouble at the time. She wasn't able to travel up there to be with me. And in fact, 2 days after I wound up in the hospital, she's having spinal disc surgery at High Smith Rainey. And there we are, stuck in hospitals all the way across the state from each other. And that was tough. But I found out something. I could turn her over into God's keeping just as well as I could myself. And it made it a whole lot easier. I had a little experience there one time. Like I say, I couldn't go to sleep in that old hospital bed. And when Emerald's cooking show is the most exciting thing that you can find on late night TV, you got a problem. Yeah. 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, when you can't sleep in the hospital, some strange thoughts can come into your mind. And I know one night I was lying there, couldn't sleep, and I began to think about all the money that had been spent on my mouth the preceding fall and spring, I'd had some teeth pulled and some bridges and caps put in and whatever. And about what a shame it would have been if the hammer had taken me out and I'd have had the use of all that expensive equipment for such a short time. Well, I told you we'd have some strange thoughts run through your mind at 2:30 in the morning. You haven't heard anything yet. I don't know whether I drifted back off to sleep and dreamed this or whether I just saw sort of a mental picture, but I could see myself laid out in a coffin. And a couple of my football refereeing buddies were standing there gazing sadly down at me. And finally, one of them shook his head in this dream and said, "Have mercy." He said, "Poor old Pope is as dead as a doornail." The old one thought for a minute and said, "Yes, but ain't his teeth pretty?" I tell that story for one reason, to make a point. That even during those long, tedious hours at 2:30 in the morning in the hospital bed when you couldn't sleep, the Lord's presence was just as real and just as strong and just as comforting there over those 8 days as it was during that moment of emergency on the field there at McRae Meadow. What I'm trying to say is, folks, God's help is not just a quick fix thing for a crisis moment. He can stay with you for the long haul, too. Now, I'm grateful that when emergencies happen, we can call on God for help. He promised us in the book of Isaiah that we can mount up with wings as eagles, we can run and not be weary, but he also said you can walk and not faint. Strength for the long pull, and I think sometimes that's the toughest test of all. Well, what did I learn from this whole experience? You see, if you don't learn from what happens to you in life, it's a terrible waste. The tuition in the school of hard knocks is too expensive not to learn something. I certainly learned what a fragile and fleeting thing life is. You know, we take it so for granted. We just kind of assume it's going to go on in the same nice pattern we've developed. But you never know. Can be just like it happened with me. One moment I'm standing there just as happy as if I had good sense. The next moment I'm lying on the ground grievously hurt. And so every morning now when I get up, I'll go into the kitchen, I'll get my first cup of coffee and look out across the window of the little pasture behind my house, and it can be raining and drippy and dismal. And you know what? It's beautiful to me. Because it's another day of life the Lord's granted, and we aren't guaranteed any of them. I find out I'm a real lucky young man. That much to the left, my spine would have been shattered when that hammer hit. That much lower, I'd have lost a kidney. So every day I thank the Lord for what didn't happen. But most of all, I'm grateful for that experience because of that firsthand personal knowledge it brought. That the Lord is my keeper. Now, some of you at this point may be wondering, what's all this got to do with me? I've never been hit with a hammer, and I probably never will be. You are wrong. Everybody gets hit with hammers in life. Everybody. They just take different shapes and forms. Everybody gets hit sooner or later with the hammer blow of bereavement as you have to deal with the loss of a loved one. A lot of people get hit with the hammer blow of divorce, which is another form of death in the family. A lot of people today get hit with a hammer blow when they get a little notice in the mail that their company they've been working for is merged with another company, which usually means your company is downsized and you're out of a job. You wonder what on earth you're going to do. And if some of you young people feel like you haven't had your fair share of hammer blows in life yet, relax. They're coming. That's the one thing I can guarantee you in life you won't get shortchanged on. Troubles and headaches. But the good news of the gospel is that whenever the hammers do strike in life, God is there. Not to wrap around you and keep you all warm and safe and snuggy, but to be a source of strength and help that can help you get through that experience and maybe even to grow from it. The only problem is that so often we put off turning to God and placing our trust in Him until we're forced to. We just sort of go along assuming everything's going to be okay and not thinking all that much about God. But then something happens and we turn to Him in desperation. Now thank God He's there. I can remember asking the assistant judge with me that day, who was the lucky one in that whole experience, because he was standing behind me. But he was lucky enough, he had just bent over to pick up something and felt the hammer actually brush his right ear just before it struck me. I said, "Ned, how'd that experience affect you?" He said, "Pope, I got instant religion." Well, that's highly understandable. Thank God that you can call on Him when something happens quickly. But how much better to begin now a relationship with God in which you develop and grow so that whenever trouble occurs, you're not desperately reaching out in the dark towards you know not what, but towards a friend. Folks, don't put that off. You young people in particular, I don't want you to be like the person that Bill Cosby told about one time. Now, this is Cosby's theology, not mine. But this man was stuck one night going up this mountain road behind a big tractor trailer truck. And he couldn't pass. He's getting real frustrated because there's nothing but mountain wall on one side, double yellow line, sheer drop off on this side, and the truck is chugging up that hill in double extra low gear. And then he gets real frustrated because he notices the bumper sticker on the back of that truck. It says, "I may be slow, but I'm ahead of you." And that just tore him up. He floorboarded the accelerator and whipped out around that truck, and right in his face was another big truck. Now, what are you going to do in a situation like that? I know what 99 out of 100 people would do real quick. "Oh, Lord, help!" Cosby said, "Oh, God had time to say, what? Blah!" Don't wait until it's that late to become close to God so that when trouble does happen, you've got some help right at hand. I've always thought so much of those words of Jesus in the Bible shortly before He died on the cross, when He said, "Father, into Your hands I commit my spirit." They just breathed an air of faith and trust. But they came to me, even more to me, when I read a little book by George Barclay called The Mind of Jesus. And in this book, he tries to research and find out through history something that would throw additional light and understanding on the things Jesus said and did. And he discovered that this little prayer, "Father, into Your hands I entrust my spirit," was a little bedtime prayer that during that time was taught to little Jewish children. A lot like the prayer your mother taught you and me, perhaps. "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray Thee, Lord, my soul to keep." And that really touched me because I thought here was the faith that Jesus learned in the earliest moments of life at Mary's knee. A faith that was tried and tested in all those experiences of His ministry, but that was there to hold on to in the moment of death. I guess what I'm trying to say was said best by Ann Perry in one of her mystery novels. This one's called Cain, His Brother. Now, I got to tell you, I'm not a great fan of English mystery novels. I usually wouldn't read one unless I needed something to help me go to sleep. I should have had one that night in the hospital up there at Crossnoor. But Ann Perry is pretty good. They're set in the Victorian England, and I've never read anybody that could evoke what that period of life was like as she does. But her heroine is a young lady named Hester Latterly, who's a nurse. And in this particular book, she's nursing in a home where the wife is dying. She knows it, her husband knows it, everybody knows it. But Hester becomes very frustrated because she sees that husband totally unable to talk to his wife on any but the most trivial level. He can't talk with her about her condition, about what's going to happen with the children, about all the things they needed to talk about. and it made Hester angry. But then as she thought about it, she came to these words. Perhaps for him it was the fear of death itself. The absolute knowledge that one day he must face it too. And in spite of even a profound religious faith, he didn't know what lay beyond. An hour a week of formal worship was no comfort to the mind or soul when faced with reality. Faith must be a part of the daily web of life. A trust tested in a myriad of smaller things before it can be a bridge from the known to the unknown. Begin now to develop a faith relationship to God, like putting money in the bank, so that when the hammers of life do strike, you're not reaching out in the dark towards something unknown. You're putting your hand in that of your friend. That's why, to me, perhaps the most precious words in the Bible are those that Jesus spoke in the 15th chapter of John's Gospel, when he said to his disciples and through them to us, "I no longer call you servants, I call you friends." Do you know God as your friend? You can. Finally, this. The hammer has become for me a symbol of mortality. Now I know that the traditional symbol of death is the scythe that old Father Time swings to cut short the fragile web of human life. But for me, understand that it's become the hammer. It's become for me the emblem of that casualty or illness which shall ere long end this mortal life. Or to put it in everyday language, I know that one day, in some shape, form, or fashion, the hammer is going to maul me right between the eyes. And that's going to be it. And that's okay. Because whenever that moment comes, the Lord's still going to be my keeper. And he who saw so well to my coming into this life, I can trust to take care of my leaving. So much of what I feel here is due to the experience I had with an old gentleman called Herbert Culliford. Just a simple old tobacco farmer that was a member of one of the three student churches I had while I was still at Duke. And Mr. Herbert had memorized a verse from the Bible. He might have memorized more, but this was the one I heard him quote all the time. From Paul's second letter to Timothy, "I know whom I have believed, and I'm convinced he's able to keep that which I've committed to him against that day." That was his favorite verse. And then Mr. Herbert came down with cancer. In the last couple of months, I knew him was confined to a bed of pain, but when you go to see him, he'd look up at you and he'd still quote that verse, "I know whom I have believed, and I'm convinced he's able to keep that which I've committed to him against that day." That was his strength. That was what he had to hold on to. But as the disease progressed and he grew increasingly weaker, he got to where he wasn't able to say the whole verse anymore. And all he could get out was, "I know whom I have believed." And finally, near the end, all he could say was, "I know. I know." Do you know? When that moment comes for you, as it will for me, will you have that certainty and that assurance that the Lord is your keeper? You can have. All you have to do is simply open your life to him. Not trying to keep any little spots back for yourself. Not trying to make deals and bargains and say, "God, I'll do this if you'll do that." But simply saying, "Lord, I turn all of this over to you. I put it all in your hands." And when you do that, the peace of God, which passes all human understanding, will keep your hearts and minds in the knowledge and love of him. And you will know that the Lord is your keeper. As we we join in our closing hymn, I hope you will make it not just a hymn to sing, but a prayer. Precious Lord, take my hand.